Since March 1st of this year, 190 Palestinians and 50 Israelis have been killed in renewed fighting. In the name of combating terrorism, the Israeli army has revived its assault on the occupied territories. Using tanks and Apache helicopters, Israel has entered the occupied territories, rounded up and arbitrarily arrested Palestinians in refugee camps, and shelled bands of gunmen. In his biggest assault in 20 years, Ariel Sharon has turned the once bustling West Bank city of Ramallah silent. These events have led up to the visit by the U.S. Envoy General Anthony Zinni and U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. As Cheney and Zinni embarked on their peace mission, many Palestinians have criticized the U.S. for its pro-Israeli bias and pointed out that Vice President Cheney did not make one scheduled visit with anyone from Arafat's administration. Finally, in a face-saving measure for Sharon and as a victory for Mr. Arafat, Israel has begun to pull its tanks out of the West Bank. Currently, the tanks are leaving the West Bank. Cheney has yet to meet with Mr. Arafat, and Palestinians live in fear of further arrests and shelling. This week, I had an opportunity to speak with a woman who has dealt with the Israeli occupation all of her life. Amal Dadot was born and raised in an Aidiv refugee camp in Bethlehem. Her parents and grandparents had been expelled in 1948 from their home in their village of Malha, which would now be part of West Jerusalem. Amal helped organize demonstrations in the Aida refugee camp in opposition to the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, beginning when she was 14 years old. She received her BA in English Language and Literature at Bethlehem University and received her MA in International Studies from Birzeit University near Ramallah on the West Bank. In her master's thesis, Amal wrote a comparative study of the Palestinian and Cherokee nations. Amal worked as a reporter and a news broadcaster for Shepherd's TV station in Bethlehem from 1997 to 98. She's a native speaker of Arabic and is fluent in both Hebrew and English. She's presently in her first year as a doctoral student at the Fletcher School of Law at Tufts University, where her focus is on conflict resolution. I spoke with Amal on the second night of her week-long visit to Vermont. You grew up in an Aida, yeah, refugee camp. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like?
Aida camp is one of the three refugee camps in Bethlehem area that were started in the wake of the war 1948 war, when mm-hmm. the state of Israel was established, and it has now 3,500 people living in an area that's 1/3 square kilometers. So this is shocking, I know, because it's this tiny area that is condensed with people. People in the camp come from 19 different villages that were either destroyed or evacuated in the war of 1948. And they live under very difficult economic and political situation. Most of the people in the camp work as construction laborers inside Israel. And with the closure that's been taking place since 1994 now, it's tight and loose by the Israeli authorities. But now, in the past 18 months, it has been so tight that people have no work. And so the unemployment rate in the camp is 70%. Mm-hmm. So many people can't find jobs. There is also an issue of water. We have running water once every 21 days. Mm. And if you come to the camp, it's amazing how the houses, how each house, at the roof of each house, you have many barrels that people fill water in them so that they can use them when the water is not running. The political situation, of course, is that these people live in the camp with the idea that it's only temporary. And it's only temporary. It has been temporary for 53 years now. People do not acknowledge themselves as people from the camp. They're people from some other village. If you ask me, where are you from? I wouldn't say from Aida camp. I say I live in Aida camp, but I'm originally from a village that's called Malha. It's in West Jerusalem, and this is how I define myself, as a refugee from that village that's occupied by Israel.
Now, your parents were expelled from West Jerusalem in
1948? They were. My parents... My grandparents and my father. My mother wasn't born yet. Mm-hmm. my grandparents were in that village, and then there was a massacre in Deir Yassin where about 100-something people died, and it's just by my village. People got so scared that they made their women and children leave. They stayed in the village in order to defend it. But if we look at the facts back then, the Irgun and Stern, there are the two Jewish terrorist movements in that helped in creating Israel, were very well trained. People in them were very well trained, and they had they were very much more equipped than Palestinian villagers who were trying to defend their village. So eventually they were made to leave.
Now you've had a long history of organizing against the Israeli occupation. Can you describe a little bit about what that was like?
I'm a believer in the fact that Palestine is my country, and there is a certain bond that's created with somebody coming, you know, being born and living in that country and feeling that this is my homeland. So since I was young, I always thought that there is something wrong. The fact that we are under curfew. And I remember when the first time the whole thing shocked me was when I was in the first grade, that a lot of soldiers imposing curfew on the camp, and my mother trying to go get bread from the shop, and she's caught, and I saw like five soldiers pointing their rifles against her chest, her back, and I'm like, I didn't know what to do with that, and that image will always stay with me. And so I thought, I started asking questions like why and what are they doing and why are they here and why they're treating us like that. And to be honest, up till Oslo, I always thought of Israelis as soldiers, mainly soldiers coming into the house, imposing curfews, taking kids and men, young men out and beating them and doing all these awful things, breaking into the privacy of my home. And they never had faces for me. They were all these people in uniforms. And I felt that there is a need to stand because I felt that this was an injustice. Mm-hmm. And I felt that we had to stand in front of this injustice. Also in 1982, my uncle was killed in Lebanon in the invasion of the Israelis into Lebanon. And this also affected me a great deal. And, you know, seeing some of my classmates getting arrested and spending 3 or 9 years in Israeli jails, it leaves an impact. And it just makes a person want to defy this oppressive regime.
In early February, about 100 Israeli soldiers, at least it was reported, refused to serve in the Palestinian territories. Mm-hmm. Do you believe this is a significant thing and represents a larger movement within the Israeli army?
I hope that this represents a larger movement, and I pray all the time because I know that there are people in Israel who are completely against occupation. And I know this lawyer, Israeli lawyer, who's really my best friend. Her name is Allegra Pacheco, and she's working with the Palestinians. She's the one who took the torture case in front of the Israeli higher court of justice because Israeli authorities were using torture against Palestinian political prisoners, and she won the case. And so I know there are people who are working for peace and who are defying the regime, and I really want to see more and more of these people emerging because it's a process that takes two people, the Palestinian people, continuing resistance, and also awareness on the Israeli side, more and more awareness on the Israeli side.
Mm-hmm. A group called Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting a couple months ago did a study of the American media and how they're reporting the conflict in the Middle East. And they found that there was a bias, a pro-Israeli bias, specifically with National Public Radio. Mm-hmm. You've been here since September. In your view, has the American media been fair?
To answer your question, it's just I want to tell you that I really try to avoid watching the American media because when I first when I first came here, I started, like, I'm interested in knowing what's going on and really watching CNN or these major networks or listening to the radio station gave me, like, made me so nervous and so angry, and it affected the way I performed in my studies. I was really tensed all the time because I felt, God, like, this is not what's happening. Like, why don't you deal with core issues? Why don't you deal with what's really going on? Why aren't the Palestinians well represented? And why is this bias? And so I really avoid to listen to the media in order to be able to perform normally.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me talk about that that core issue there for a second. I guess that since the beginning of this month, 190 Palestinians and 60 Israelis have been killed in fighting. This is what's been reported. Israel's justified this fighting and this offensive in the name of fighting terrorism. Is that, in your mind, the core issue, or what else is going on?
For me, this is a symptom. It's not the core issue. Mm-hmm. People tend to think of it as a cycle, and I tend to think of it in terms of it's a linear issue. It's one powerful nation imposing occupation, humiliation on another nation. Pull that occupation out and you won't have any reason for the people to resist. Mm-hmm. So it's taking the form of, you know, one group hitting hard and then one group reacting. It's like you're slaughtering a chicken, mm-hmm. and the reaction is that the first reaction of the chicken is that it moves really, mm-hmm. you know, it moves really heavily in reaction to the fact that it's being killed. This is how I look at my people. My people are not equipped. They're leading very hard lives, mm-hmm. and they feel that they've lost everything, and they're being pressured all the time, and this is how they react. I mean, a person who is strangled is really gonna react and hit back, and this has been really our story since 1948 and even before.
Today, the New York Times reported that Ariel Sharon is referred to as the butcher by Palestinians. Is this how you would describe him? And do you believe that he's also provoking violence as an excuse to occupy the West Bank?
Well, the whole issue of this current intifada started with Sharon visiting the Holy Mosque in Jerusalem. It was an inciting visit, and it raised the whole tension and the whole reaction on the Palestinian side. And he is a butcher for me because he killed 2,500 people in the camps of Lebanon, Sabra and Shatila massacres. And for me, before I left, my sister has two kids. One is 1 year old, and one is four years old. And with Israelis coming onto the camp with Apache helicopters and with F-16s, she's like, oh, please, can you promise me one thing? And I'm like, what's that? She's like, well, if they come and massacre us, because Sharon is known as the guy who just conducted them. I mean, he ordered or he worked with the Falanges, the Lebanese militias, mm-hmm. to carry out the massacres. She's like, could you come and check for my sons? And this was really, I mean, it tells you how people really feel. People are fearful of something like Sabra and Shatila happening. And I think what happened in the past 10 days, I lost three friends of mine in the camp. One of them was my classmate for, like, between the first grade and we ended high school together. And she has two kids. She's married with two kids now. And one day, she had, like, her kids had a mother. Now they don't. And I don't know how I'm gonna just go and look in the faces of these two kids. It's, I mean, there are massacres that are being conducted, but they're conducted in a clever way that they're not conducted in one day. Mm-hmm. Like, if you kill 100 people in one day, then the media will be so angry. But if you do it over a week, then mm-hmm. the impact is really less than, you know, when you do it over a week time. So I can't think of him in any other concept unless he gives me the reason to. And then he's also a butcher of the land. What he does to the land is, it just, you know, that the word that captures that is rape. He just goes with bulldozers into the land and he rips the land off and he confiscates lands and builds, you know, takes away trees and builds settlements. And most of these settlements are empty. They just take them for the sake of taking them and getting rid of the Arab population there.
Well, we've just sent Anthony Zinni down to try to come to some sort of ceasefire agreement. What do you think his prospects are?
I'm praying so hard that he can accomplish something, but this administration's interest in the conflict, I mean, I can understand the fact that they're so busy with the fighting against terrorism, but I think it's a major step in, if you want to fight terrorism, just try to find a solution to the Palestinian question, because only in peace in Palestine, Israel, that you can guarantee the fact that some terrorists using that as, it's like a hanger, it's used as a hanger that, oh, we're fighting this war because the Palestinian people are being oppressed. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they have their own interests and agendas. And I think it will help a lot in the United States fight against terrorism to try and find a solution. And I really hope that Zinni can reach a ceasefire between the two sides, because there has been enough blood and enough killing on both sides.
What do you think is the solution?
The solution is two states living side by side with each other in peace. And this means ending occupation and evacuating settlements. It's mm-hmm. as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us?
I would love to see more and more Americans fighting for justice. And by fighting for justice, I mean writing to their senators, contacting people, talking about this problem to people who have influence mm-hmm. over there, in order to stop the current killing and the current violence that's taking place there. And I would like to see a hand stretched to help build Palestine, because what has happened in the past 18 months has destroyed the infrastructure, has left so many people without hope. And I think that helping these people by giving them hope is really important.
Medea Benjamin from Global Exchange was here last week, and she talked about the war in Afghanistan. She came back from Afghanistan and did two delegations there and spoke with a lot of women there about Rawa and about what it was like to be a woman in Afghanistan. And also, she also talked about how the best thing that Americans can do is to fight the war against terrorism is support Rawa and the women's organizations in Afghanistan. What is it like? What was it like being a woman growing up in Israel,
in Palestine? Being a Palestinian woman in Palestine is, in fact, I don't think that there is any difference between being a woman, being a man in that, because I believe that the Palestinian society is one of the most liberal in the Arab world. And we see so many Palestinian women working in all fields, all walks of life. Like, you know, you find women doctors, women lawyers, women politicians. We have the famous Hanan Ashrawi. And it's restricting in certain areas, like the rural areas and Bedouin areas. But I think if you talk relatively in terms of, if you want to compare Palestinian women status to other Arab women's status, you will find that Palestinian women are in the front lines. Mm-hmm. And I think that this gives so much hope, because by supporting a Palestinian society and by supporting women in the Palestinian society, it's going to help liberalize societies in the whole of the Arab world, not just in the Palestinian society, and by supporting oppressive regimes like occupation, I think it has its impact on strengthening terrorists and strengthening extremist thinking in that context. And I really would like to see more and more working together between American and Western women and Palestinian women and trying to to achieve more progress for Palestinian women.
One more thing. Given the fact that the media in the United States is so biased, proven to be biased and towards the Israelis, what is some way that folks here who really want to know what's going on in Palestine can find out and then maybe do their part to get involved?
What I do is I contact my family. The source is my family, and I try to follow up some Arab and Palestinian media over the internet in order to really know what's going on. And I think that, for me, really, media, I really love the media because I've worked for a TV station back home, and I think it has so much authority. It's like it's called the fourth authority. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a disgrace that you don't convey both sides' story. And I think in order to be effective, you have to be able to present the two sides of the story and then let people judge. And it really bothers me that this bias with the American media, in talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Are there Palestinian solidarity groups or other ways that Americans can get involved in both learning more about the actual Palestinian view of what's happening in the Middle East, and also how they can get involved to support folks such as yourself?
In the period between 1996 and 1998, there were so many young American groups coming to Palestine and having joint programs with Palestinian youth. Mm-hmm. At various levels, including students who are becoming aides for senates, and students studying political science, and students studying economics, and so it was really I saw that as a light for hope, and because there was so much interaction on both sides, and in order to understand each other, we have to we have to stop seeing each other as the other, mm-hmm. but try to accept each other as human being and try to understand from each other's experience, because this adds to the richness of the very fact that we're here together on this earth. And I think that this should continue and work with Palestinian NGOs. There are so many NGOs that deal with different issues, like women issues, children issues, politics, economics, name it. And this can be really a good opportunity. Also, I would like for the American government to work with the Palestinian Authority, because there is so much help that the United States government can and guidance can give to the Palestinian Authority in building an infrastructure in the Palestinian areas.
Right. Amal, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
All right.
Thank you.
This report has been brought to you by the Free Radio Burlington Collective in Burlington, Vermont. Contact us with questions and comments at Free Radio Burl, that's Free Radio BURL, at yahoo.com. To learn more about the Israeli-Palestinian crisis, read The Guardian's special report on Israel and the Middle East at www.guardian.co.uk, or visit the Israeli Independent Media Center at www.indymedia.org.il. Amal Jadot's visit to Vermont was sponsored by Pax Christi and Vermonters for a Just Peace in Palestine. To learn more about Pax Christi, contact Sister Miriam Ward at 802-864-3885. The music for this report was taken from saxophonist John Ellis's new album, Roots, Branches, and Leaves.